As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We are here to react to Manchester United beating Aston Villa in that crucial game on Sunday. I'm joined by Carl Anker and Laurie Whitwell. We are hoping to speak to Andy Mitten as well. We'll hear from him on the podcast, I can guarantee that. But he is actually currently trying to negotiate his way through security at New Delhi Airport on his way back from his Indian tour. So your guess is as good as mine at this point. Only Andy, Carl, could do this.
Only Andy. I was moderating the matchday chat on the app on Sunday. And for quite a few were going, what is Andy Mitten's life? How is he able to do such such things? I'm like, great man. Great man and a wonderful storyteller.
I'm just shocked he's still married, Laurie, aren't you?
Well, this is it. A forgiving family was what I was going to say there, Carl. How's he able to do this? Because it's, what is it like, just 20 past seven that we're doing this in the hope that Andy can join us, because we're obviously having to fit around Andy's Indian adventure, which is absolutely the right thing to do. But hopefully this early morning start isn't all in vain.
Hopefully, yeah. Right, we're going to do the match now then. We're going to do the match reaction, give Andy a little bit more time to maybe join us. He has sent us a voice note, so I can guarantee you that later on in the pod. And he's also sent us a message from someone in particular too, which might be able to guess who that is, but I'll leave you in suspense for the moment. But Laurie, you were at Villa Park. That was a really important win.
Massive win. I mean, when you just boil it down to the numbers, you know, they're 5 points behind Aston Villa in fifth place, which, you know, we've debated about whether that's going to be enough for Champions League or not. Let's claim it is for the time being.
Put the emotion issues to one side and just focus on the fact that
Going straight down to the hard tacks right away, the numbers.
Don't worry about what needs to happen.
Right. So United, rather than being 11 points behind with a defeat at Aston Villa, like Man City got, like Arsenal got, you know, it's obviously a difficult place to go. I know that they've had a little bit of a slide recently. That game against Chelsea was a kind of indicator that perhaps they're not hitting the peaks that they have done earlier this season. But nonetheless, I actually thought it was a really good performance from Villa, the kind of performance that enabled them to get that victory against Man City in particular, the kind of swarming nature in midfield, the cutbacks that, you know, a number of chances that, yeah, United rode their luck. Andre Onana, I thought, played well overall, although it was kind of like a bit of a mix in terms of what he was producing.
But so
I think that United showed real grit and determination. You know, you could see early on that they were kind of giving each other the high fives at blocks and different things. I think Diogo Dalot's first contribution
was a high five.
Chasing back. Well, it was a high five, but before that, it was a justifiable moment that, you know, triggered the high five, which was an incredible kind of chase and then tackle on Jacob Ramsey, I think it was, which was very similar to his block on Jared Bowen, really. You know, that kind of coming from nowhere to make an intervention. So it was that kind of performance from United, bodies on the line, you know, kind of pulling together, which is, you know, at times earlier this season we've felt that it's been fraying and that hasn't been there. But this was kind of a return to what gave them that sequence of good results last season, when they are, you know, all in as one. And then obviously you've got this incredible factor off the bench, the Scott McTominay issue.
Yeah, we'll talk about Scott a little bit more in a moment, because your article on The Athletic revolves around a quite remarkable stat about how many points he's earned Manchester United this season in the Premier League. Carl, though, Rasmus Højlund again, 5 in a row now in the Premier League. He's the second youngest player ever to do that, behind Nikola Anelka, who did it at 19 for Arsenal. But it's more the fact that there's just a cutting edge to United. They were clinical yesterday, and in the first, 10, 15 minutes, they started the game well again.
Yeah, really, really started the game well. Clearly had a game plan. Harry Maguire was dominating camera on set pieces. You go, oh, this is it. Keep an eye on this. United probably can get a goal here. Goal comes from Maguire getting the flick on, and Højlund is just fastest to react. Has the ability to stay onside, which was one thing we talked about previously about this Aston Villa Highland. I think it was 3 offsides in the first 15 minutes against Villa, and I was just like, we get it, calm down.
Yeah.
The chances will come. So the game plan was good up until that first goal, and then you could see the old jitters came through as United gradually began to lose a little bit of control. Laurie's completely correct. You know, Dalot was good again, continued this decent run of form he's in. I think he should be the starting right back for as long as possible. I'm saying this, and I've just remembered Luke Shaw is maybe injured as a precaution, so you might have to switch him over to the left-hand side. But I think Dalot's now beginning to take the next step and being a proper starting quality fullback, which is good. It was encouraging. Scrappy. Didn't really think United were going to win it until McTominay got that thumping header, but we'll take it.
Yeah, I'm a bit Roy Keane about the high fives, but there's no doubt that he is progressing now, Diogo Dalot Laurie. I mean, Gary Neville spoke at length about him in the post-match on Sky Sports yesterday as well. And that coming from that particular right-back for United is a very important piece of praise.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, a bit Roy Keane. I thought, is your beard going a bit Roy Keane there, Ian, as well?
Just meant do your job. You're there to defend, so don't congratulate yourself.
Stop high-fiving
when you tackle.
Well, you know when we, hug each other after a really good podcast, are you, fuming inside?
Yeah, just get on with it and go home. Yeah, okay, come on. We've done our job.
Okay, sorry.
By the way, when have you ever hugged me after doing a podcast?
I've never done that.
You just walk off, normally. Yeah. I have to just, chase you out before security throws out of Old Trafford.
I've done my job.
Yeah.
No, there's no, this is all for the show, isn't it? This camaraderie.
Absolutely.
There's nothing behind the scenes.
get on with it, then.
Diogo Dalot, sorry, get on with it. It was a really good cross, wasn't it? I mean, I was just watching Match of the Day 2, actually, and Stephen Warnock said he's one of the best crossers in the league, which I think, I don't know how many matches he's watched of Diogo Dalot.
We're all shaking our heads here.
Yeah, I mean, no. He did put a really good one in the first half, to be fair, that Højlund maybe was a little bit on his heels for. But yeah, I think he's definitely improved in that aspect of his game. I mean, it was a superb cross, first time.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that Gary Neville used to do. David Beckham used to do. Okay, I'm not getting too excited, but
all right,
you know, first time cross. And it was teed up really nicely, wasn't it, by Maynou's sharp feet. I'm not sure he meant to kind of pass it to him in that moment, but it was actually a sort of nice move altogether. It's from a throw-in, Bruno Fernandes to Maguire. And then, you know, Maynou makes a run and gets found. And, you know, it wasn't just a kind of freak occurrence that all of a sudden McTominay is in space in the box. That's the idea, isn't it, with Ten Hag? Listen, it's 20 minutes left of the game. You know that McTominay can finish in these really clutch moments. And, you know, they had Højlund and McTominay occupying the two central defenders for Villa, which is something they hadn't had to do prior to that point too much. And even Garnacho was actually free at the far post. So if it had gone a bit deeper, he might have managed to gobble it up. But no, really good cross. And he's certainly, I mean, he's doing the defensive work well, isn't he? And it was a really tricky one for him and Garnacho, particularly in that first half with the way that Villa were attacking down the left. Because it felt like, I was trying to figure out, I was like, they are playing well, because Garnacho was tracking his man a lot. And I was like, they are playing well, but also Villa are getting a lot of success down this left. So where do you sort of find the balance of you know, who's doing well, who's doing bad?
I think that one is the next step for Dalot. I was talking to Jacob, who covers Villa, and he said this is a rotation Villa do all the time. You know, Ramsey moves inside to create the box midfield, Moreno overlaps. And they kept doing it again and again and again. And we've all played 5-a-side, we've all played 6, 7, or 8-a-side. And if they keep running the same thing and you're the defender, you tend to have a word with the guy ahead of you saying, look, this is what they're going to do. I need you to do this. I don't mind what the manager or your technique is. Do this and make my life a bit easier. And Diogo needs to get, you know, a bit less high fives and a bit more Roy Keane of do your job, which is do this. And I think that'll be the next step for him.
So do you think he should have said to, was it Mainoo on that side, to kind of come across more? Or because, I mean, there was a moment, that the one there where Watkins gets in is actually because Varane's kind of caught in two minds to come forward or drop. And then it's actually Dalot that, you know, kind of gets back and kind of puts a bit of pressure on Watkins. So he sort of does all right there. But I think just the system that Villa had, it did need maybe in certain moments more attentiveness from United.
It was between the four of them because there were so many Villa players involved that it actually impacted the entire right-hand side. So you can go between Varane, Dalot, Mainoo and Garnacho as to who should deal with it and who should do something differently, because it was a very clever piece of movement. But Carl, yeah, you wouldn't expect them to get joy out of it multiple times like they did.
Yeah, yeah. And this is what Villa do. They are tactically astute. They have certain things and rotations that they know work, and they're going to do it over and over again, and hopefully you bend rather than break. I think they also exploited some space behind Cobby, like Robbie. Well, I've done that. They've also exploited some space behind Mainoo as well, because Casemiro just looked a bit rusty.
He's not quite there yet, is he? On the ball, maybe a little bit more. And he picked up his yellow card, Larry, as you'd expect. I mean, it wouldn't be a day without that. But what a
yellow
card.
But this was an unlucky one. It wasn't. He didn't touch him, really, did he? I mean, he sort of goes
did
for
he
it,
not
mate,
touch him?
He didn't touch him.
He should have made it clear, Casemiro, that he didn't. I think he's still running around in circles just near the halfway line at Villa Park.
That was all very pantomime, wasn't it? That it was.
I thought it was a replay actually, when they were showing it, of the first bit of him remonstrating. But oh no, he's still going.
He's still going.
I really like the bit where he very clearly, like, he wagged his finger and then realised if he wags his finger, that counts as dissent. So he sort of changed the gesture with his hand three or four times to be really sure that it doesn't count as dissent, because he didn't want to get another red card. I went, yeah, fair enough.
I think it's a bit of a giveaway as well to all those other times where he's protested, but he really knows that it was a booking. So, like, yeah, he hasn't really gone the full way.
He's now undone half a season's work of protesting against bookings.
Yeah. Referees are just going to go, well, he's not lasted for, you know, a minute now, so it's I'm justified in giving him this booking.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
For Mainoo. Dalot. Manchester United steal the lead. Scott McTominay bounces off the bench and makes the difference again. And what a difference that might be.
Let's talk about McTominay then. Your piece on The Athletic, Laurie, if people want to go and read it. But I'm going to spoil it by revealing the stat that's at the heart of it. Scott McTominay has been worth 12 points to Manchester United so far this season with his goals, and that's more than any player in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's...
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those where, you just sort of think after the game, think every single one of his goals has sort of meant something, and so therefore that obviously then triggers the idea that, points per goal is quite is going to be something, and I just thought, I wonder if it's the most in the league. Asked Opta, and then, he leads the way. So 7 goals... and United have won 12 points as a direct result of those goals. And I know, obviously, it's always like this kind of hypothetical situation, isn't it? Like, well, okay, if he doesn't score, well, maybe somebody else would, and you can't really attach all the positivity to his influence. But actually, when you look back on it, yeah, you can. Like, I mean, yeah. Brentford, for sure you can. You know, it
especially
was
1-0. When you're subbing on for these moments as well.
Exactly, exactly. It's such a specified role that he's got now under Ten Hag in these moments. Yeah, he's only started 12 Premier League games this season. He's come off the bench 9 times. Obviously at Wolves he did it, first touch I think it was that he scores with his head.
Yeah, it was.
Chelsea, that was one of his starts, but both of those goals was a 2-1 win. Sheffield United, that was another start, which got the opening goal, but it was a 2-1 win. So all these kind of moments are, and I suppose that's a consequence of United not winning matches by more than one goal very often.
Goal difference is back to zero, Laurie.
I know Andy must be, wherever he is in India,
he's probably
right
partying
now,
actually about
punching,
that. He's not trying to get through the airport security at all. He's staying there.
Well, has anyone else seen Andy's attire? He looks a bit like a school child in what he's wearing. Why? He looks really young. I know he's 50, but he like all of a sudden became this kind of high school student to me.
He's an ambassador role and he's taking things seriously and he's in his formal attire. That's yeah. I think that's what he's going for.
Let's go with yours then, Carl, because Laurie thought he looked like a school child and I thought he looked like a school teacher. So maybe calling him an ambassador, a Manchester United ambassador. There we go. In India is probably a kinder way to do it. In terms of McTominay though, Carl, I'm sure he always had an ability to do this, but for it to become so specific and so successful for him, it was a couple of minutes against Leeds once and then Scotland at the start of the qualification for the Euros that he seemed to have unlocked this ability. But he does it every week now almost, it feels like.
It's really, really remarkable. I mean, after he scored, I think, two goals in qualifying for Scotland early in the season, I wrote a piece outlining why doing such a role for Manchester United wouldn't really work. I said, you know, the level of opposition he's playing against for Scotland is a lot lower than the Premier League. And while McTominay can get goals, I don't think he's capable of scoring goals at the clip needed for a team such as United. And here he is, scored 7 goals in the Premier League, more than any other United player. 12 points won this season, so I'm eating humble pie. No United player scored more goals in the league. And I think you could make the argument, no United player has as much attacking freedom than Scott McTominay right now as well.
Yeah.
It's, you know, don't worry about this, don't worry about that. Just wait for Rasmus and or another player to occupy the other centre-backs and then find the space in the box and be authoritative. You know, he can do that. That was a thumping header. I completely did not see that coming.
Do you think it is the freedom, Laurie, that's the difference then? Because I did sort of joke about it a minute ago, but I remember that game so clearly during COVID at home against Leeds where he scored those 2 goals early on and it was about Leeds man marking and he was running off Calvin Phillips. But he's so effective at it that it seems bizarre that this hasn't been seen and utilised earlier, because he was always a holding midfielder, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was the circumstance though in that was his role, because he was always coming through the academy, you know, a number 10 really,
right.
You know, a more attacking player. I mean, it seems that all these players that are kind of number 6s always were attacking players coming through, and we might get onto another one in the current United team in another podcast, but yeah, so he's always had this ability, and also his stature I think helps, doesn't it? You know, 6'4", he's imposing in the air set pieces, that he's going to be a bit of a threat. But I mean, 6 touches in the game yesterday, and obviously one of them was a goal, one shot. You know, it's this kind of distilled McTominayism that is giving Ten Hag some hope in the season. And I was surprised, I have to say, that Marcus Rashford was the one coming off. I mean, you actually agree with me. I thought some people sort of disputed this when I posted it, but I thought he just looked really good running at Matty Cash, like more purposeful. He'd got him on a booking. And there was actually a moment after he booked him when he did have another chance to attack him. He didn't quite go for it. He kind of he chose to pass it. But I thought, okay, keep going in that route and he'll get sent off here. So I was surprised that he was the one that came off. Garnacho, I suppose, was running with the ball also quite well and having shots, but probably should have passed it a couple of times maybe. But then he brings him on. And I actually thought, again, that he was sort of taking up similar positions to Højlund. There was one moment, they're right in front of us in the press box at Villa, where they both dropped. They're like literally 5 yards apart from each other, both dropped. And then they both sort of made a dart to run. And they're both like kind of looking at each other almost like, oh, wait, I was going to do that. Sorry. Kind of.
They
you know,
do this quite often. Again, I know you can't do the perfect, who else would have scored these goals? I think the Chelsea game in particular, Højlund probably would have got at least one of the goals that McTominay scored, because they do occupy such similar things. But also, I think that's to their benefit. Well, it's to McTominay's benefit, because Højlund is the main threat and the defences are going to be locked in on what he's doing. And sometimes you can be so focused on what Hoyland's doing that McTominay finds an extra bit of space.
Well, are they going to start changing now that they know that McTominay's goals are worth 12 points?
Could be good news for rock and roll Rasmus.
That's it. He could then benefit. I mean, just to complete that table, so you've got like Son Heung-min, 12 goals, 10 points won. Dominic Solanke, 13 goals, 9.1. Erling Haaland, 16 goals, 8.1. And then Salah, Saka, Richarlison are all 8.1 for different amount of goals, but all way more than McTominay.
This is hilarious.
It's like who's who of attacking talent in the Premier League.
Fantastic example of working smarter, not harder. Because this is all McTominay now offers. He is not involved in build-up in midfield. And we talk about why he's only been able to do this season. And that's because for so much of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's time, for so much of the Ralph Rangnick bit and Ten Hag's first season, your central midfielders needed to do more. You needed to offer some form of passing play, some form of more adept defensive positioning. But now the squad is a little bit better in these areas. You've got Casemiro, who is a better defensive midfielder than Fred. You've got Mainoo, who is a better passer from deeper areas than...
It feels an upgrade on Eriksen, who was used in that particular role for much of last season.
Yeah.
Even if it's just the physical output paired with the technical ability.
So there is a greater opportunity for McTominay to focus on the thing he's really good at, which is late arrivals into the penalty area when the defenders are looking at everyone else. I don't think he should be turned into a striker. I don't think he should be the number 10.
We get questions on that every week, don't we?
We do.
About McTominay being a striker.
I don't think he should be a striker because if he's the main threat, everyone will lock him down. I don't think he should be the number 10 because he's not got the passing range of Bruno Fernandes or any other players at United. But last 20 minutes, you need a goal. I think it's okay. I mean, I did make a noise when he came on and I saw Bruno Fernandes shift to the right, but he shut me up, didn't he?
Yeah.
There's a point to make on all this as well that Ten Hag touched on after the game. I thought it was a really nice quote, and you could tell that it's one of these ones that he's been thinking about maybe because he sort of said it a couple of times.
We can beat anyone. Was it that one? No.
We can come on to that maybe in the second half.
Perhaps we need to.
Of the podcast.
Could have won at Liverpool.
And Arsenal. He said that McTominay is an example for many other players these days. He's ready to bring this energy. He's always giving this spirit in the week when he is training as an opposition member, which is quite an important part. Now, if you remember, Jadon Sancho, for example, didn't do that aspect of his requirements before the Arsenal game to Ten Hag's desires, and that's then caused this whole ruption there. Working on himself, he's ready for 1 minute, ready for 90 minutes. Great to have such a player. So he's not. So basically, what Ten Hag seems to me saying, he's not one of these guys that's got such an ego that thinks I should be starting. I've scored 7 goals that have got United 12 points. I think he probably appreciates that these have been very specific circumstances that he's managed to have these chances and score these goals. But then, nonetheless, he could start. If I want him to. But equally, he's very happy, as Carl said, to make us make some kind of weird noises when he comes off the bench and then do the business. And I thought his celebration was great as well. Going over to that away section, it's a brilliant away section, isn't it, at Villa Park? And you just see all these kind of limbs flying all over the place. Apparently his dad was in the away section, McTominay's dad.
Brilliant.
So one of those kind of enjoyable moments, I think. And after the game, it felt such a momentous win. Again, I know it's only to try and get into the Champions League places, maybe eventually.
Get fifth.
It's not where United ultimately want to be, but you're allowed to savour these kind of late wins against a team that's really difficult to play against, where they've had success against other big clubs. Hoyland, Varane, Bruno Fernandes all gave their shirts away to fans in the away section. So that's what that kind of McTominay moment gives you.
It's Villa Park, isn't it? It's Manchester United and Villa Park. It's another chapter what is a glorious history there, to be honest. I know the last couple of years have been a little bit forgettable there, but down the years there's been some incredible moments. And the incredible moment this time was Erik ten Hag sitting in his press conference, Carl, and telling everyone that Manchester United can beat anyone after his first ever victory away from home against a top 9 side in the Premier League, which,
he's feeling himself now, isn't he?
I think that's a sign that he feels he's onto something.
He's getting a lot more things off his chest in his press conferences. So after West Ham, he said, "You didn't believe in us."
Yeah.
And now he said this. So, I mean, in Ten Hag's mind, he's been vindicated after spending so long saying, "Wait until all these players are fit and then you can judge us."
Yeah.
And now he's dealt with the difficulty of losing Lisandro Martinez. And he will have to negotiate or navigate the difficulty of whatever's going on with Luke Shaw. In what you said, Laurie, I think Marcus Rashford had a good first half going past Matty Cash. Luke Shaw was there in the connection. But when Victor Lindelof came on at left back, Rashford definitely took a downturn.
Well, there was that awkward moment, wasn't there, where it leads to the Watkins chance where it's like a point blank save where, I mean, it was a weird, we had a few of these with Onana goal kicks, but he basically ended up giving it to Lindelof on, you know, left back position, and Rashford went long and Lindelof went short, and Cash just had like 20 yards. He read it well. And yeah, so that understanding, as you say, there just wasn't there.
Yeah, Ten Hag will have to sort that out, and I'm not sure who the best player to play at left back for next week is. We still don't know too much about the status of Terrell Malacia. But yeah, if Ten Hag thinks when everyone is fit, United can beat anyone, he almost has the body of work to make that argument. I definitely don't think he can beat everyone away from home, but at home, he's beaten Arsenal, he's beaten City, he's beaten Liverpool, he's beaten Chelsea.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
Barcelona.
Yeah, go on.
Brentford. But
you could...
Actually, Laurie, what did Ten Hag say after the game on Luke Shaw's fitness status?
Yeah, it was interesting. He basically said it was a precaution, but then he added on to it to say that Shaw had given some complaints at halftime, and then, you know, we know his history with injuries. We couldn't go with that risk. He said we knew it was a very important game against Villa, but we couldn't miss him for 6 weeks, which kind of implies to me that it's, you know, a hamstring issue of some sort. You know, he had a false start, didn't he, when he came back from the injury that kept him out for like 3 months earlier this season. He played a lot of games actually in that time, sort of 6 games in a short space of time, and then he sort of felt it again against Bayern Munich, but he came back, didn't he, after that. It wasn't like he then got injured. So they're obviously managing him, clearly attuned to the fact that if he does properly injure it, then he is out for a decent length of time. And that's what Ten Hag's referring to there. So I guess in that situation, you'd always rather err on the side of caution. You know, they were 1-0 up at that point. So can we just, you know, grind it out? Ultimately, they did need another goal. But I can see totally the logic of taking Shaw off, even in a precaution situation.
Yeah, we're talking about being surprised that United sub, with it being Rashford who was coming off, I was absolutely shocked to my core that Unai Emery took off Leon Bailey, because Victor Lindelof must have been doing cartwheels when he saw that number go up.
That was really quite remarkable. Emery was asked by Sky Sports about that substitution afterwards, and he gave a sort of non-answer. And Roy Keane gave him the benefit of doubt. He said he really dislikes it when managers are asked about their substitutions, because you just take, oh, hey, it's my decision. So you could feel, yeah, Roy Keane was having memories of his time at Ipswich and Sunderland there.
When he made bad substitutions and didn't want to be asked about them.
You said that, not me. If Roy Keane is listening to this podcast, I did not say that. The left-back situation is concerning, and I will probably now spend a bit more time trying to watch Benfica games, if Fernandes starts pulling up any trees, just to see how that situation evolves. I think there will be big questions this week towards Ten Hag about the injury status of Malacia, because I'm pulling the face. Where is he? This knee injury seems really, really, really bad. At this point in time, Ian, would you move over Dalot to left back and have Wan-Bissaka at right back?
I think that has to be first choice in Luke Shaw's absence, doesn't it? I mean, there's been Amrabat at left back, there's been Lindelof at left back, but yeah.
See, Sergio Reguilón got an assist for Brentford.
Yeah.
Good corner.
Come back, Sergio, all is forgiven. You know that bit we said about being all right in the second half of the season? Yeah, I think it probably is Wan-Bissaka right back. But then again, where's Wan-Bissaka, Laurie?
Yeah, good question. He's one of these ones that you sort of almost forget to ask about sometimes, just because he kind of comes in and out the team, and Ten Hag goes through his injuries, and you're sort of thinking, okay, yeah, Rashford, that's a big one. Sure, that's a big one. I don't know, I have to say.
No, okay, we'll keep an eye on that situation. Just before we finish the Aston Villa section then, we need to give Harry Maguire his flowers, as you would say, Carl, don't we? I mean, man of the match, I think he was given by Neville. He was just Maguire again, wasn't he? I mean, you know, Erik ten Hag spoke about giving him the start in the last Premier League match because he'd been so good in that period, sort of November time, and he just seems to have picked up where he left off, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Ten Hag mentioned that this combination of Maguire left centre-back and Rafael Varane right centre-back worked because you had Luke Shaw on the left. And it was the Maguire that's was so good in that 2019-2020 season in 2021. Just kept things simple, you know, meat and potatoes, defending stuff, makes your tackles in front of you, doesn't get too, you know, if he has to turn around, he makes sure he times that tackle well, and was really good in both boxes when it came to set pieces. I don't know what United plan to do with Harry Maguire next season, but yeah, if Maguire is happy with this third-ish
choice centre back role, and you know, United can keep getting some more left footers in the team. Long way to continue.
Do you think he's getting some of his authority back as well, Laurie? Because no question, you know, being stripped of the captaincy, also the issues is, you know, he seemed to have with Cristiano Ronaldo and some of the stuff around that when he was at United. But then the last few matches when he has played, you see him again giving out the instructions. He's never shied away from that, in fairness to him. He's always put himself forward and, you know, he's always available as well, isn't he, when he's fit. I think he's played through quite a lot of injuries and issues during his time at United as well, which is commendable. But I wonder if he's sort of rebuilding that authority that he had in the team before the issues I've just mentioned.
I think so, just because, I mean, when you're playing well, that gives you natural authority, doesn't it? Where you might feel a little bit cheeky sort of calling people out if you're not doing well yourself. So now that you're actually making a difference in a really positive way. I mean, yeah, as Carl's touched on, the set pieces was a big thing. He actually could have got a penalty if he'd made more of it with Kamara in the second half. Kamara's had his shirt all over him. But then I did notice that did Lindelof have a load of Carlos's shirt?
They're all having a big scrap in there.
There was a lot of shirt. But it was one of those where it felt so, he was holding it for ages and you're like, he's literally almost got his off his head, but anyway. But then, as you say, it was more the blocks. I mean, there was a really good block in the first half where he has to adjust his body to do it. Obviously, there's the classic sight of him on the floor, kind of having just, you know, wiped out people with his head, and he's kind of just sort of, you know, shaking the cobwebs off. I was really pleased again with his performance, just because it was that kind of night at Villa where you could easily have succumbed to the kind of overwhelming, you know, consistency of Villa's carousel in attack, and you know, that would have then, you know, a wilting didn't happen basically, and I think Maguire was a large part of that.
Okay, well, we're still waiting for Andy Mitten. There's still no sign of him at the moment, but we can bring you some reaction to that Aston Villa game from Andy's mate.
Ollie, Scott's just scored a winner.
Yep.
You absolutely love Scott McTominay. How are you feeling about that?
Of course, he's justified my words this weekend for you.
You've been raving about him all weekend, haven't you?
Yeah, so that's what he does. Scott always gives 100% for the club, and he represents Man United himself and his family in the best possible way. So, well done, Scott.
Big win at United.
It's a big, big 3 points. Absolutely massive.
Have you had a good time in India?
Oh, yeah. Apart from that journalist always bothering me.
You,
See you later.
Have a safe trip back. Bye bye.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody. It's Andy here in New Delhi, the capital of India. I've been traveling around for a couple of days with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's been speaking to United fans in Bangalore, in Mumbai, and in Delhi. And he's had an incredible reception. Hundreds of fans have been meeting him at the various airports and then attending him for an interview at night time, where he's really candid, he's really open, pretty relaxed. And he just said to me on Saturday, as he prepared to get into the lift, having been serenaded by loads of fans in Mumbai, he said, "It's nice to do things like this sometimes. It makes you realise that I didn't have a bad career." I mean, talk about understatement. So after he'd done his final interview, I watched the United Villa game with him in a hotel in Delhi. I love watching football games with professionals, former professionals, managers, because they just see things that you don't see. And I watched the first half with Ollie, and then he had to make some calls, partly because it's Mother's Day in Norway, and partly because he had to leave to fly back. My flight was a little bit later, I'm about to go to the airport now. And he was saying that Harry wins the headers first time all the time. He said, just watch him, watch him, watch him. And then he saw Harry have a word with the referee after Casemiro had been booked. He said, that's what a good captain does. He said, he's basically getting in the referee's head that you can't book Casemiro a second time because the first booking was a real soft one. He was also very praiseworthy of Bruno Fernandes. Yep, I get it. He signed him. But he was praiseworthy of Luke Shaw as well. And he talks like a United fan because he is a fan. And he's ready to work again and to be a manager again. He's had loads and loads of offers. He really has. But it's about taking the right one for him. When Rasmus scored, I obviously said that's because, you know, he's Danish. You'd never find a Norwegian striker scoring a goal like that, which he obviously found extremely funny when he wasn't giving me stick. Like when he was on the stage, he was talking about how the media can turn against you, like it did at a time when he was Manchester United manager. And as he said it, he looked towards me and pointed, cheers, Ollie. I thought I was very supportive of him when he was United manager, but he's been in a decent mood. And a better one, when Scott McTominay, who he absolutely loves, he's a player who he keeps in touch with because his kids really like Scott as well, came on and scored the winner. And what a winner. He was very praiseworthy of Diogo Dalot in terms of improving defensively, and that cross was superb. So we spoke about the Villa game before the last podcast, and I think we were all pretty confident, weren't we? We felt that Villa had dipped a little bit and United were coming into something, and if it was going to be substantial, then we needed to win at Villa, and a draw wouldn't be good enough. Actually, truthfully, after 70 minutes, I would have taken a draw because there were times in that game when Villa were so on top. But those winners are what we live for, and I would have loved to have been at Villa Park. It's one of my favourite away games, away grounds, at least usually. And just looking at that United end, and my mates were sending me photos and videos, and they were all singing on the coach back to Manchester, Erik ten Hag, Erik ten Hag, na 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 na, to the tune of what is it, Simple Minds? Yeah, Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds. So Eric's clearly having a few smiles at the moment after a really, really rough December and rough most of the season, if we're honest. But a winning run has started, and one of my editors said to me last week, okay, don't get carried away. Let's see how you can do against Aston Villa. But Manchester United have beaten Aston Villa. There's still a gap. But when the team's on a run and teams above are starting to falter a little bit, it's encouraging. This team ain't winning the league by any stretch. But the idea of a top four finish doesn't seem quite as fanciful as it did only a week or two ago. To go to Wolves away and win was really good. To put three past West Ham, for, you know, this United team doesn't score many goals and only reached zero goal difference at the weekend against Villa, was very encouraging. To go to Villa, well, you know how this team have struggled to do well away from home, especially against teams in the top half of the table. Aston Villa are absolutely worthy of being in the top half of the table. They've beaten Manchester City this year. They had some great results in December, and they've got a fantastic manager. So I'm feeling all right today. I've got a long, long flight back now. But I've had a really good time in India. So many people came up to me and said they listened to this podcast from India. They knew everything about everything. One lad brought me some Maltesers, which I loved. The lads from Pune brought me some typical dress and headgear from Pune. So Manchester United are massively popular in India, and it seems that Talk of the Devils is really popular here as well. And they were giving me messages for Ian, for Carl, and for Laurie. So that was all really nice, because sometimes when we do this podcast, you're by yourself, you're locked away in a room, and writing is a very solitary experience as well. But to come face to face with so many people, that was good. I'm smiling because of the love we've had from India, because of the smiles I've seen on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's face this weekend. And the promoter Tillack did really well bringing him over and, you know, filling big, big venues in big Indian hotels. And I'm smiling because Manchester United beat Aston Villa away. Bring it on.
And we're smiling listening to you, Andy, as well. He's still not with us. He's still trying to negotiate his way through the airport, I presume. It feels like we're not going to get him on this podcast, but at least we've heard from him. And what a voice note, Laurie. There's a lot of Andy Mitten in there, isn't there?
Well, I was going to say, I can't believe he shafted us for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Oh, yeah.
But then, I mean, his voice note was long enough to... I think, has he already spoken more than all of us put together on this podcast with that voice note? But I love the way his mind works and sort of meanders through these different topics. And then obviously finishing on that high point, because he's right, you know, whenever we are out and about, it's amazing to see the people that come and say hello. I had it in Stockport, actually, the other night. Not quite Mumbai, but yeah, closer to home. And somebody come up and said, oh, yeah, listen to the podcast, really enjoy it. So we do massively appreciate it to everyone that listens and then comes and says hello to.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you to every single one of you. And he can remember Simple Minds tracks to the drop of a hat as well, Carl, which is good to know about Andy.
We finally got him singing again on this podcast. All it took was for him to go to another country and not be looking at any of us while he hums the tune.
Yeah, it's a good song as well, actually. I'd listened to the video that was, I think, Andy posted on Twitter of the fans on the bus on the way back from Aston Villa. In fact, Ollie, producer Ollie, maybe you can play it in here for us so people at home can get a sense of what that song actually sounded like. Yeah, quite catchy that, actually. I can see that one catching on, and at least Andy didn't need to sing it in a yellow jumper to try and get the masses on board with that one as well. We actually had an email regarding Andy's trip to India, which I think is really lovely, and I'd like to share it with you if that's all right. It was from Dev in Mumbai. He said it's been one of the best days of his life where he felt closest to the football club that I love, meaning Manchester United. He was welcoming Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the airport. He got his autograph, had a photo with him as well. And he also attended the event that Andy was talking about on it, where he got to talk to Andy, discuss some of the articles that he's written, and even got a signed copy of United We Stand. He then said, over dinner, I managed to pick Andy's brain over what clubs like United could do to make fans in India feel more involved. I learned that United were planning to come to India in the summer of 2020 before COVID. Meeting Ollie was an absolute honour. However, having been an avid Talk of the Devils listener since the beginning, talking to Andy was definitely the highlight of the evening.
Incredible.
Wow.
Wow, Dev. Yeah.
No.
No, mate.
I can't believe Andy signed. He's given his signed autograph, has he, Andy?
Yeah, signed fanzine, it sounds like.
Wow.
I presume it was Andy who signed it and not Solskjaer. But Dev, I mean, Andy's great, but I think maybe meeting the former Manchester United manager and the player who scored the goal that won the treble for the club as well is probably a little bit better, but each to their own, I suppose. Right, we're going to leave it there, but thank you so much for being with us and listening. We'll try and bring you an update on Andy's situation at some point, maybe on social media or something like that. But Carl and Laurie, thank you for getting up at this ungodly hour for absolutely no reason, but it's been great to do the podcast with you. So thank you, everyone. We'll see you on the next one. Take care. Bye-bye.
Athletic.